Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Wednesday, April 27th, 2005. Today's session is a forum on Holden's leadership and direction. Presenters include Diane Shiner, Molly Archer, and Christopher Gilia. Session number FO2005-09. Let's listen in.
My name is Diane Shiner, and I'm co-director of the Village. The other person is Jen Grant. And she went out today to make some phone calls in regard to our pastoral search, which I'll talk about in just a minute. And in terms of the way the leadership, I don't like to think of it so hierarchical as like ripples. We have a 20-member board that consists of people from all over the country who commit to a six-year term that can be re-upped one more time. And then Janet and I made a five-year commitment as directors. And then we consider the core management team here at Holden to be four people, which is Janet and I, and these two fabulous people next to me, Christopher and Molly, who will tell you a little bit more about their roles. And we sit as the management group. Molly actually came along very shortly after Janet and I, but Christopher is the senior member, meaning he's going to turn 50 soon. of the group in terms of his years here. I think what we'll do is maybe introduce a little bit of our role as we go. Each of us are going to talk about three things. There's many, many things that we could talk about. We're going to do little highlights. And then we're going to try and make that fairly brief so we can open it up to your questions or concerns. So I will start, and they'll go on and do introductions as they go into their sections as well. First one is why Janet's out, and that is that our pastor Emily back there is going to be leaving in early August, and we've decided through an extended process that we're going to call an interim pastor for about a year to come to the Village, and we've been in that search process for a few months, and we now, there's an internal committee. The new directors who are coming in September are also part of that committee, as well as two people who live in Wenatchee, and five of our staff, I think, five or six. And there are four applications. We've decided that we may interview three of the people. They were very good applications. And Janet is out trying to make some of those arrangements. The input of the incoming directors will determine whether we're going to do two interviews or three interviews, depending on how the consensus kind of falls. Our hope is that that person might come sometime in July, make a good smooth transition with Emily, and would probably serve until sometime next summer when we would move into a long-term call. Long-term at Holden actually means two or three years. And so in the great scheme of those of you in congregations, you know that that's relatively short, but it's a significant change for someone to consider coming up to Holden. So that is in process, and the second thing is that is in regard, as I look in the room, I can see that there are several people who are here who have contributed generously to a major campaign to raise funds for the future of Holden. That has been going on since our 40th anniversary in 2002. And we had a goal of raising $2.4 million, very ambitious for Holden. Most of our donors, this room is probably a very good profile of who contributes to Holden in terms of a lot of professional people, many people who are contributing to society in ways that don't necessarily bring in a lot of income. And so we're really very pleased to have gotten to $2.5 million already. Mm-hmm. So we are ahead of where we hope to be by June 2005. The ultimate goal is 4.8 million, and part of that is geared to our facility improvement, and Christopher will talk a little bit more about that, but certainly one of the most visible highlights is the rising from the ashes of Chalet 2, which is going to give us a great deal of versatility in terms of ways we might be able to serve people throughout the seasons in the future. But it is not just about buildings. It's not a capital campaign. It's a comprehensive campaign. And we've been able to take on several new initiatives because of the support. Most specifically, it's been around the area of diversity. We started out wanting to be able to ensure that people who might never have an opportunity to come to a place like Holden because of being economically limited would get that chance. And we've always budgeted scholarships, and until we kind of took this on as an intentional role, we often didn't spend the money that we had set aside for scholarships. Since we have been much more intentional, we are now moving. In fact, our outreach coordinator, Jane Ralph, who's sitting right over there, works with helping to reach out to these different groups. And how many groups do we have probably coming this summer?
We have budgeted for 7, and we've definitely gotten the 7 requests, so we're trying to figure out how maybe we actually sent out letters to 16 groups based on the relationships we have and are hoping to find a way to make it all work within the budget that we've got.
That is a considerable increase from when we started the campaign. It's thanks to that support. The other piece of it that has been a real step for us has been our week in the summer that is in Spanish, Abriendo Caminos, and we will be going into our third year this year. All of us learning a lot about how to become hospitable in new ways, and so we're looking forward to that event this summer. And if any of you have Spanish-speaking neighbors, friends in your communities, please, we'll give you some brochures and you can take them out there. The third thing that I would comment on, there's also, I think you might have these in your rooms, the annual reports has a lot more of our financial information if anyone is interested or has questions. But the third thing grows straight out of the campaign, and that is that one of the ways that we got to that 2.5 million was certainly because of many people giving generously, but gifts around $100 or $200. But also through that campaign, we just received nearly $1 million from the Lilly Endowment. And the Lilly Endowment tends to fund seminaries, colleges, significant places of learning with a special love for young adults and for church leadership. And we are sort of in a category of our own. We're kind of an experiment for Lilly because they have been hearing from us about us for a long time from people who have gotten Lilly support to go on sabbaticals, and they have come here and then they write back to Lilly and talk about their experience, as well as colleges that have relationships with us. And so it's clear that we have a role in fostering leadership for the broad church. This does not mean it's just for everybody who's going to go to seminary. It indeed speaks to all of us that try to follow Jesus' footsteps more closely in all kinds of walks of life, but very consciously. And even if it's been through scrubbing, you know, we also hope that all of you are having a renewing experience while you're here as well. There's three parts to that funding that we're getting from Lilly. One is that we're going to be remodeling this building for programmatic purposes, and I'm going to turn it over to Christopher in just a minute to talk about that. The other is so that we can increase the number of sabbaticals, partners of ministry, kind of extended stays that people make here when they might be reevaluating vocation or some other kind of transition in their lives, as well as We should be able also to do some more partnering with other institutions, such as we have J-Term with PLU and St. Olaf now. We might be able to do other things like that, where with other institutions that are also interested in vocation and call, we might create some new programming. So we have a new person outside the village, Brad Kamak, whose title is called Partnership Builder, and he is now the second person who's full-time on our staff outside the village. The first person has been someone involved in fund development, and that happens to be somebody that has now taken another job, so we're looking for a replacement. So again, you can go do some recruitment there as well. I could say way more about any one of those topics, but I'm trying to just give you some little samples. Christopher will do so now, and then we can go back and you can ask any other questions.
First, I'd like to welcome all of you to Work Week. And I apologize for not being here to greet you as you got off the bus on Sunday. Looking around the room, I think I've met about two-thirds of you, maybe a few more, and the rest of you, I hope to meet and learn your name through the rest of this week. This is my ninth consecutive spring work week, and we've been here 8 years. And the reason there's nine is because 9 years ago, in the spring of 97, our family came for a one-week volunteer in spring work week, just as you're doing now. And I worked as a maverick that week, and it went well enough that our family started talking about long-term staff. And we then returned that summer on long-term staff. And I was the new garage project manager. And we built that garage, as you know, and I almost didn't get hired as operations manager because they were afraid I wouldn't finish the garage then. But we finished the garage and a few other things as well. So we've been here 8 years, our family, and some of the things that my job entails is looking after the physical plant, the moving parts of the village, including transportation, safety, long-term project development, and those type of things. And I've been asked to talk about three of those things right now. I'm going to do it fairly briefly, just enough to kind of whet your appetite. And then as we open it up for conversation, please come back and ask questions about the things that interest you and the things that you want to hear more about. The first one is Chalet 2. And Chalet 2 is a project that is nearing completion. Hopefully you all noticed it immediately. I'm sure you were paying careful attention to the bus announcements, but you may have kind of looked off to the side as it came into the village. It's got 10 bedrooms. It allows for 20 people to live there. It's got a classroom in the basement, a daylight basement. It's ADA compliant on two levels, on the basement level and the main level. It's the most energy efficient building in the village. It's the safest building in the village, and its use has been designed to be very versatile. People are asking, well, who's going to live there and what's it going to be used for? And my job was to build it so it could be used for anything by and had any group of people live there, whether it's guests or long-term staff or short-term staff. We're going to start out using it for what we call long-short-term staff, those folks that are here for less than a year but more than several months. And that will be starting when, you may ask, when is it going to be done? And the answer to that is the day before we start the Koinonia remodel. We do have an operations tour on Saturday, so please join me for that tour if you can, and we'll look at Chalet 2 and any of the other projects that we have going on. And the dedication for Chalet 2 is scheduled for June 22nd, and we hope to be mostly done by that. And the Koinonia remodel, which starts the day after that. I have two sets of plans here. These are draft plans. Some of you have helped to shape those plans. As we sat in conversation like this last year and other years, as we've talked about what we want to see in this building. These plans now are at the engineers. The structural engineering work is being done right now. I talked to that person yesterday. We go for a county building permit this summer and hope to start this fall. The big difference in Koinonia is that it will become all program. Building Chalet 2 has created 10 bedrooms. It's given us the possibility of increasing our programmatic space. We can't increase the size of the village, but we are able to build this building so we can increase the amount of programming space. So Koinonia will get a second Creekside room. If you're familiar with the room right back here, we'll have another one right above it that will be very similar. And it's going to have more room for arts and crafts. And that room is going to be brighter and warmer. And it's going to have something we call a learning center, which is a larger, more consolidated and multi-purpose library. And that's going to be in this end of the building. The walls are going to go away. We'll have one large room with southern exposure, and we're busy working on plans for that one room, but that's a very important part of the project. It's going to be ADA, American with Disabilities Act, accessible on all levels and every part of the building. It also will then compete with Chalet 2 for being the most energy efficient and safe building in the village. So if you want to look at those plans, I'll be happy to go through them with you, take them on, look at them by yourself, or ask questions as we get to conversation. And lastly, the mind remediation. This is something that we could talk for days about, and it's hard to know a little bit where to start, because some of you don't know anything about what I'm talking about. Others of you have followed this quite closely and are very curious about the very latest developments. The reason I wasn't here to greet you on the bus on Sunday is because I've been in Seattle, and on Monday and Tuesday, I sat in on two all-day meetings between what we call the agencies, the Forest Service, the Environmental Protection Agency, and the Washington Department of Ecology, and Intelco. And Intelco is the mining company that owns the liability that has to clean up the Holden mine site. And this last 2 days of meetings are the latest in a long series of meetings. I'll give just a very brief thumbnail sketch here so you can kind of decide where your questions may lead us. In 1997, a process began called the Remedial Investigation, in which a company named, which is now known as URS, came to the village to do water sampling and investigations as to what exactly is going on with the tailings and the mine. How are they impacting this valley? How are they impacting Railroad Creek? And over these past 8 years, that remedial investigation has been completed. Something else called a feasibility study has been completed. And over a dozen alternatives were identified in how to clean up the environmental situation at the Holden mine. Now, through all these meetings, we're down to two alternatives. One in which the agencies are promoting, and the other in which Intelco has agreed to implement. And there's about $22 million in between those two. And that's down from well over $100 million spread originally. So an optimist would say we're getting very close. A pessimist would say now we're down to the hard questions about what really they're going to end up agreeing on. And there was some optimism in the room those last 2 days. And just very briefly tell you the kind of things they've agreed that we can expect to see happen over here and the things that they're still trying to decide about. The idea is to keep clean water out of the tailings and out of the mine. And any water that gets into the tailings or the mine, then to clean that water. So there's a whole series of diversions that will take clean water as it comes down the mountain and trench it and pipe it off to the sides and into Railroad Creek without flowing through and under the tailings, as much of that water does now. And then on the downside, collecting any water that did get into the tailings and did become contaminated, intercepting that and putting it through a treatment cell before it reaches Railroad Creek. And so that's basically been agreed upon. The upgraded diversions are going to be done. That's something both sides agree on. They're going to regrade the tailings to get better drainage so that water doesn't sit there as long and seep in. That's agreed on. The slopes of the tailings, which are very steep, right down to the creek, they're going to be cut back, pulled away from the creek, and that's going to happen. That's been agreed upon. The portal effluent, the little river that flows right out of the mouth of the portal, will be collected along with some other seeps. Other distinct places where water flows out of the mine will be collected and went through a treatment. Some of the things which are arguing about these last 2 days, about the agency saying this needs to happen, and the telco saying we don't see the benefit for the amount that it's going to cost, are something called, the big one is called a partially penetrating cutoff wall. And this is digging a trench 30 feet deep all along Railroad Creek between the tailings and Railroad Creek and pouring concrete in there in order to separate any water that works its way through the tailings from getting into Railroad Creek and collecting it on the upside of that. That's a very expensive piece of work, and they have not agreed to do that yet. There's some disagreement on the nature and the placement of the water treatment plant. The agencies would like to see it down below tailings pile number 3, fair distance from the village. There are some real advantages to that, but it's more expensive than having it right up here. So that's a disagreement. The waste rock piles, the overburden, the third level, the agencies would like to see that regraded and revegetated. And Talco's not sure that's really needed. And there's many other small technical disagreements, like how to handle the mill structure itself, and how much energy needs to be generated for the water treatment plant. And that is a direct result of how clean the water is coming out the other side. How clean is really clean enough? At this point, the cleanup could begin as early as a year from now. That's fairly optimistic. That would mean at our next meeting, which is in June, everything would be resolved, and everyone would leave the room shaking hands and saying, we got a deal. It could happen as early as the summer of 2006. It's unlikely to happen that quickly. Chances are it would be at least the summer of 2007, and possibly much longer. But a lot of these players are kind of tired of how long this has taken, and they really want to see something happen. The agencies want to see environmental cleanup. The Intalcos want to be free of their liability so they can move on. So there's some momentum about solving this thing, but there are some stumbling blocks. Holden is a PRP, same as Intalco. We are a potentially responsible party. You may have heard that word, because we own the land, we own the mine. We did not cause the damage, but we own it. Therefore, we automatically have some responsibility. And we expect to sign an agreement with the Forest Service fairly soon, which defines exactly what our responsibilities are. And we expect them to be non-monetary, something that is proportional to our resources. Something along the lines of supporting and giving access to the project. And you'll hear more about that as we know more about that. That's something exciting that's developing right now. So, Paul, that's a little brief overview. When we get back to questions, think about what you want to talk about there. Again, that's a subject that I'm happy to talk about with you later, too, because it's a big subject for the village and for what we're trying to do tonight.
I'm Molly, and I serve as our business manager here in the village. I've been here, I'm the most junior of the three, and have been here just short of how long Diane was here, since August of 2000. And it's been a great team to work with. I'm going to just hit some highlights very briefly so that we do have time for questions. So if I'm too brief on any of these, we'll have time to pursue them more in questions. But as I refer to the great team that I've been working with here, I have to acknowledge that this team will be changing. Fortunately, Diane and Janet won't be leaving until September, although many people think you're leaving sooner and are starting the goodbye process. We have selected new directors. Our board started that process back in the fall of 2000. It was a very prayerful 2003. It's been a very careful and prayerful process, very thoroughly done, had a lot of good original candidates, narrowed that field down, did interviews, went out and did site visits with some of the candidates, and came through with a selection of a team of three, Paul Hinderly, Carol Lund Hinderly, and Tom Alstrom, who are the owners of the Harborview, is that correct, cafe back in Minnesota?
Wisconsin.
Oh, gosh. It's very close to Minnesota. Where they've been for about 25 years, I think, running that restaurant. They came and visited the village in March and had discussions with a lot of the folks here about how things are going and starting to kind of get a feel for what their roles might be as they look towards being here. They will be officially installed as directors in June during the board meeting, and then hope to be here the 1st of September to begin their transition with Diane and Janet, and then go forward from there. Another big event coming up very shortly here in the village is that we are going to be installing a very limited use satellite email system. Which, yeah, we have had and do have a satellite telephone here in the village that we use only for emergency purposes. And it's been very carefully monitored both by us on management to make sure that we use it only in cases of extreme emergency, death in the family, illness or an accident here in the village, those kinds of things. And now in summer of 2004, the board adopted a communication policy that I want to read to you that says, to accomplish the Holden Village mission, decisions about the use of communication technology will be guided by the value that Holden Village is a place apart in which fostering embodied community and reducing distraction and pace are high priorities. The Holden administration will communicate to guests and staff a message that highlights village mission. Concerns for furthering Holden's mission and the preservation of community shall guide the administration's choice and employment of communication technology. A report of practice will be made to the board of directors at its annual meeting until it is deemed unnecessary, which is essentially what we had been doing with the satellite telephone. And then we began, a year, 2 years ago, the use of an email system that was going up and down on the boat. We would put a disk in our pouch and send it down to our Down Lake office, who would then upload it and put it out on the internet, and the emails would go out to folks, looking a lot like emails, but from our point of view, not acting really very much like emails because of both a very long time delay, but probably more importantly, a lot of flaws in that system. Christopher was telling me that just the other day he sent emails and lost 10 of them or something along those lines because of this process of putting them on a disk and then taking them off the disk and all that. So our management group, through discussions this winter, both among ourselves and with the community, have decided to put in a satellite dish that will be as discreetly located as possible and as well camouflaged as possible, but not really a secret. I mean, if anybody asks, we won't deny that we have such a thing. And it will be used only for business communications and only on a incoming and outgoing basis twice a day. So it's not going to pop up on our screens all through the day with little "you have mail" messages, but just once in the morning and once in the afternoon, we'll be able to retrieve and send that mail, very similar to the pouch that comes in during the summertime in the morning and then goes out in the afternoon. And we have created a practice statement that we intend to follow here as management as to what appropriate business uses will be and who will be allowed access to that based on their need for business use, not necessarily limiting it to the management group, but to those people in the village who have the most convincing need for that business email. An example would be the work on Chalet 2 and the extreme frustration that Brian Contio went through many times during the winter trying to communicate with suppliers to get what he needed to keep that project moving, and sending out a message one day and then 2 days later, well, that phone number was wrong, give us a new phone number. So 2 days later he can send out the phone number. So 2 days later he gets a message back from the supplier with questions. So 2 days later, and you can see how frustrating that would be to try to operate a business in that context. So we're gonna try that out, and that will be starting very soon. They should be here to install it next week. Yeah. I do want to talk a little bit about what's happened in the village this past winter. There is a very good article, this group of articles in our Good Courage. This kind of also leads into what Diane already talked about with the selection of the interim pastor, where we had quite a bit of dialogue in this winter community about Holden's stated policy of inclusion of all people as part of worship, as part of our practices, and our anti-discrimination policy, and our desire as a community to include in our call process pastors who are what's called an extraordinary candidacy project roster, which is separate from the ELC roster, because these people are the acronym is GLBT. You'll see that in the articles, which stands for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered, people who desire to have a committed relationship with a partner. If they agree to be celibate, they can serve on the ELCA roster, but if they have a committed relationship, they cannot currently do that. And we wanted to be able to be fully inclusive of that group in our call process. And the board was at the same time in the midst of the process of identifying and selecting the new directors, and replied to our request with a response that seemed to us to simply want to delay that decision, which caused great pain in our community, has also, I think, caused great pain on the board, because the community took it as a non-supportive response from them. It's been a very difficult conversation, but also a very healthy conversation, I think, by virtue of the fact that we could have a conversation about it and work through this. We're still in process, we're still processing. The board is still processing, and we'll have discussions about this when they come here in June. I'd invite you to read the Good Courage articles. This led us, what I was going to say then, into the interim pastor call instead of calling any full pastor at this point in time, is why that's occurring.
But the interim call is inclusive of ECP, of the ECP roster, so the commitment is there for the interim, and we presume it's there for the long term, but at least that's where we are right now.
Right. Summer program is coming up. Looking ahead, the theme is Take Off Your Shoes. We did some practice on some music that Scott has written tonight. Kristen is working on our theme art, and Dorothy Bass has been working on our teaching staff. Again, I'll direct you to the newspaper that you may be folding tomorrow. On page 3 is an article by Dorothy that does a really nice job of highlighting that theme and talking about all the different perspectives that you can see in it, which range from environmental to God's presence in surprising and ordinary places, to the liberation of those who are oppressed. It's a good article that summarizes it very briefly, what the different aspects of that theme are. It's based on the reading in Exodus where Moses is found with the burning bush and told to take off his shoes. He's standing on holy ground. And then on page 2 of the newspaper is, for the first time, a published listing of our teaching staff scheduled by week.
Oh, how's that
going? We'll see if we do this again.
We'll see how that goes. I'm hopeful, as the business manager, that that may lead to increased registrations. We are a little bit short on our registrations this year compared, not so much to last year because we had work camp and it's not comparable, but even looking back 2 years ago, we're down in our guest numbers. I think a lot of that is fuel prices and the difficulty and the cost of traveling to get here. So maybe putting something like that out, people might see a week or a person that they're interested in and say, well, okay, maybe we will come this summer to Holden after all. And I'll put a plug in for staffing, that along with our guest numbers being short, our staff numbers are short as well. So we are recruiting staff right along with hoping that we'll have more guests. And with that, I think I've covered most of my stuff. We'll open up to questions.
I just want to say really quick, the Bible study this week is on that summer theme section, and I am in the process of writing the summer theme worship, so feedback from in the Bible studies is also helpful in that context. So all those things that Molly just talked about as far as summer theme goes, that's also our Bible study for this week.
And that's tomorrow 3:45?
Tomorrow and Friday 3:45.
Thank you. So we could have questions about, or comments, thoughts about any of the things we've said or things we haven't said, because we really would like also to hear from you. So, Bill.
Christopher, given the minimum energy requirements for the water treatment, how is that producing that energy going to impact Holden?
For the mine cleanup, the water treatment plant will need energy. It could be a mechanical treatment plant that takes a lot of power, or it could be a mostly passive plant, which takes much less. And it will have both positive and negative impacts for us. A positive one is if they build a generating plant of some type, we could create an intertie between the mine system and the Holden system. And in the summertime, when we have surplus power, we could loan that power to the mine project. And then in the winter, when we have a deficit, they could pay us back then. So that's a potential benefit. The downside mainly is around noise and also a certain amount of increased hauling of fuel up the valley. It looks very much like they would build a diesel power plant, because the capital costs are so low compared to any other alternative. That's not settled for sure, but that's what's been indicated to us at this point. And having the plant down below pile 3 with a modern power plant, I don't think we would hear it. If it was up here, there would be some noise associated with it. It could be something that's very small, the size of a Honda generator even. Or it could be something more the size of our own diesel power plants. Does that answer your question, Bill?
I think one part of that is that from the beginning it was clear that we didn't have surplus power. So it doesn't affect us in that way.
Is that what you meant?
Yeah.
Yeah. We would not be required in any way to supply power. But it would, anything that's going to exist in this valley indefinitely will be something that we'll be involved with in some way.
But it wouldn't be so much power that they would consider running wire up here again?
No. It's extremely unlikely. It's not even been suggested.
Would that diesel cause any kind of pollution?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a certain amount of pollution that's caused by the burning of diesel. A modern plant is much less than an older plant, and it, no more than a truck would have running full time. But the greater danger is the potential of a spill, because that diesel would need to travel up Lake Chelan and then up the road. And diesel has been hauled up Lake Chelan and up this road for 65 years, and there's not been a serious spill yet. But the amount would with a fully mechanized plant, which Intelco does not believe is required and the agencies are pushing for, would mean an increase in that amount of fuel haul. And the amount of safeguards against spilling now are much more stringent than they ever were in the history of Holden. the requirements, the double walled and the spill cleanup kits and the response time for cleanup crews and the technology around cleanup is all very advanced. So there would be, all these safeguards would be in place. But the potential always exists. So that would be a fear, the greatest fear I'd have for pollution.
On the radio telephone, is there, why don't you use it? I mean, are you trying to keep a sort of isolated place? Is mm-hmm. that the issue or cost yeah. or?
I think there's a lot of, I wouldn't say fear, that's too strong a word, concern that some of the nature of this place arises from the fact that we can't communicate easily with people outside of Holton. And the more easily that communication can occur, that we may lose some of the integrity of this place apart. And so we're doing it in very careful, slow steps, so that at each point we can assess whether we think that is affecting that integrity or not. I know for myself, when I came as a guest, it was very important to me as a professional that I had a place that I could come and tell my employer that they couldn't call me. Because otherwise, any place else that I went for a vacation or a personal retreat had telephones, and something comes up at the office and you can be called and here you can't. So there's I think that's part of what we're trying to protect.
I'll give you a little feedback on, I would appreciate if there was some place you could call and there'd be somebody. You know, rather than always mm-hmm. have to leave a message on a recording machine and they may get back to you and that sort of thing. I mean, if you want to keep it down the lake, I don't care. But I mean, to talk to a person is really important to me, you know, and
so you're referring to the message phone now at the bed and breakfast?
Yeah, I mean, I've called now about 10 times, and I would say 2 times I got a person.
Mm-hmm.
And they will get back to me and that sort of stuff, but it always delays the thing, you know, and you don't, there's a certain amount of uncertainty, and I kind of wonder, you know, if you got people down there, why can't they be near a phone so they can answer the phone, you know, and mm-hmm. and do that kind of stuff. I mean, their job is message stuff. I mean, I can see you wanting to preserve this place, but down there, I think you can be in touch with the real world, can't you?
Yeah. Well, I think Corinne has that. Here's a former B&B volunteer.
You might want to volunteer to
I'm not criticizing what your work is, but I think there should be some way of talking to somebody. That's all I'm saying. You know?
Well, having been involved in setting up an office for an institution, you very quickly becomes a full-time job or more, and that's an additional budget.
Well, isn't the place big enough to warrant that? That's what I'm saying. I mean, the number of people served and all of that, to have that kind of connection.
One thing we could try is publishing the times that they're there, because they are there. They're not there from 8 to 5, but they are there certain times of the day. And you get to know that, and you can call them in. But mm-hmm. that would be a possibility.
That would yeah. help some.
Yeah. Have office hours. They wouldn't be all day, but they would be.
Or to add that to the message, that if you want to call while somebody's here to answer a call within
but,
8 hours.
That even that would be a little difficult.
Yeah. It wouldn't guarantee that you would get somebody, but you'd be more right, likely. Yeah.
But actually, I do think you are. Some of the intensity around this conversation does have to do with core values. And I think one of the ones that you're referring to right now is hospitality as our mission. And I can see us being criticized rightly if somehow our improved communication system is basically for us to conduct business, but not to be more hospitable to people who are trying to make some kind of arrangements. And there are so many areas around here, we call them creative tensions, where we value two things. And in this particular case, it is stated in the board's policy statement, the sense of a slower pace in the entire process is seen as a real value to this place, that people come here and are kind of intrigued by the fact that they have to write a letter, you know, to make their reservations and so on. And so for some, just that saying that we do this differently because we want renewal to be the spirit throughout, that's one thing. On the other hand, I really hear what you're saying relative to a reservation or checking something, that for you to have a way more complicated process than we might have in order to buy some lumber, there's a bit of an inequity there. And so we're wrestling. That's why we're calling this an experiment, because we really want to try and lift both of those values. So I appreciate you bringing that up.
Last summer reminded us of the vulnerability of Poland to fire, and I'm just wondering, you know, what sort of additional thoughts and planning had been done in terms of preparing for the time when we actually might have a fire come right up to the village at some point.
There's been a lot of preparation that was prior to last summer's evacuation, which really helped us to do that, not only smoothly, but feel some confidence in the ability to protect the village from a fire if it were to get into this valley. And those preparations have stepped up a notch. There's a whole range of things that we can do and that we are doing, and there's another whole range of things that we can encourage in the Forest Service, but we can't do ourselves. And those are ultimately what's going to need to happen. And the Forest Service, as a very large organization, sometimes takes a little time to get the wheels turning and to get some results. And I met with the Forest Service just last week when I was in Chelan, and there's a few things that are starting to happen there, partly as a result of the fact that Holden now is a little bit more on their radar than it was before the evacuation last summer, and that's a good thing. And the kind of things that they're looking at is valley-wide fuel reduction, and that's the thing that we can encourage, but that's way beyond our ability or to deal with. The things that we've done is we have, for example, Lodge 3 now is fully protected with the new sprinkler system. All the spaces, the porches, year-round. That's new. We've done that. It was part of a grant that we received. We continue to upgrade our sprinkler systems in the village. We are going to replace all the chalet roofs with metal, which is a large one. That's where we're most vulnerable right now, is those chalets with the wooden roofs. We are, as we remodel buildings, we remove flammable materials and we put in non-flammable materials. And we create better detection systems and ways to contain the fire in a smaller part of the building. We, for years, have been working on our defensible space around the village, and we'll continue to do that. And we're hoping to receive fairly permission from the Forest Service to expand that defensible space, that ribbon of area around the village where vegetation is controlled, and many other things. So it's not been a sudden big change, but things have gone into motion now as a result of the Deep Harbor fire last summer, and we're grateful for that.
We have wondered a little bit if the memory of the fire and the concern about the weather this winter may creating a real dry condition for the coming year is somewhat impacting our registrations with a kind of a wait and see attitude. So if you ever hear anything like that, we certainly refunded money last year to people whose plans had to change, certainly if a fire occurs, it's out of our control, but we probably learned a lot and improved a lot of our systems this last year in terms of a more, we're coming from a stronger place at this point, should something happen. was another thing.
As a case in point on the fire, I was here when someone from the village last June spotted smoke above Monkey Bear. Apparently, the Forest Service watches lightning strikes on the satellite, but they don't know if there's smoke on the satellite. They just see the strike. They don't know what's going on. So, has any attention been given to the thought of they're communicating the lightning strikes when they're close and our spotting to make sure there's no smoke? In other words, has there been any development in that area?
Well, what they do is they send a spotter plane over.
Yeah, and I heard him on the radio. By another radio, I heard that communication between Wenatchee and the spotter, but he already had four jumpers with him.
So that's how they do that. They could have, in a storm cell like that, they could have 50 or more strikes in the ranger district. And they send out the spotter plane, and they're able to see a lot more than we can from here,
that.
And a lot more effectively. And we, of course, have our eyes peeled.
But there's one plane, and it has to cover many miles.
Right. But it still can cover many miles, where all we can see is this valley.
But the plane can't be in two places at once if the lightning strikes are over on the Sawtooth and here too, is what I'm saying. That the reason they went to airplanes is because it costs less. But it doesn't give quite the coverage as spotters on the ground. But I'm just curious if they were working on that.
Well, as you know, that was one that we spotted, one of our staff folks spotted before the spotter plane saw it.
I understand, and I say, and that was effective. I don't know where the plane was when that happened. But it was effective. What? It was spotted like in the evening just before supper by somebody over on the tailings. Mm-hmm. It was 7:30 when we were walking to a meeting that we heard the communication and saw the airplane overhead. So
that's... I'd like to ask Molly, I was concerned about when you had the evacuation last year, you obviously lost a lot of revenue of people coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been able to recoup and be on track?
Okay. We had our insurance had a business income loss provision that has two different triggers in it. One is if any of our buildings are destroyed, so if one of the lodges were to burn down and we couldn't house those guests, we would have reimbursement for that lost income. But it also had a provision if we were evacuated by civil authority. Mm. Which is what our evacuation was.
Yeah.
And so we didn't get everything back, but we got a good chunk of it. And we also made a little money off of the Forest Service folks that were up here doing their laundry. So we gave them free ice cream, though. I don't know about that. Anyway, so financially, I think we came out pretty well in the short run. I think there may be more long-run impacts, like Diane was stating, in terms of people being concerned about fires here. Mm-hmm. We're still waiting for the check from the insurance company, but I'm assured that that's in process.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks, Anna.
Any other questions or ideas? Or how many of you are coming back this summer, do you think, is this? Or staff, yes. Oh, good. It really is going to be a great summer. Dorothy Bass is our summer teaching staff coordinator, and probably one of the earliest prepared. I mean, she's got really some excellent people this summer.
Good question over here.
On your water supply and your generator stuff this summer, any concerns over that?
We have some concerns over that. It's, as you may know, typically in the summertime, starting right about now, we have surplus electricity because there's lots of water flow, and that continues into the fall. and then the water slows down and we have less water in the winter. This year we've had a somewhat unusual set of circumstances. We had our peak water flow in January rather than in June. And that enabled us to go all winter this year without burning any diesel fuel or burning any firewood. We heated the village entirely with the weather. In fact, for a while we had so much electricity that we were able to heat the village center for basketball and things like that. And so that the weather patterns this winter were very unusual. We have a low snowpack, we had a mild winter, and we have this unusual early flow, and we're not seeing the spring flows that we normally expect now. The power has come up a little bit, but nothing like it has previous years, so we can only speculate what may happen later in the summer. And it is possible that we will have some power shortages during a period of the year which we've always had surpluses.
Can you use your wood or your diesel?
We can, and we might. The firewood can be a little concern if it coincides with fire season. And diesel fuel, as you know, is very expensive. The fact that we didn't burn any this winter has saved the village a lot of money, so maybe we'll have to spend some of that money later this winter. We really don't know. It's an interesting coincidence as our Science and Technology Committee, which is a group of volunteers that advises the village on technical issues, has been spending a lot of time over the last several years looking at global warming and how it may impact the village in the future. And the primary impact that they believe we would feel is a shortage of stream flows, especially after the Copper Basin glaciers are gone. And maybe this summer we'll get a little taste of what that may look like.
What's the impact of the noise? Not being a first timer up here, what's the impact of the noise if you start running your generator because you're short electricity in the peak gas season?
It's not too bad. It's far enough down the road that it's a little rumble. If you kind of put your ear to the ground, you can hear it anywhere. I have a little different perspective of it when I want to hear it, because I know it's something that's running and going
operation.
Maybe somebody else. When we run that thing, have you noticed? Have you found it loud?
It's louder than the hydro, but you can hear the hydro too.
Yeah.
That's the sound of water.
I guess my question is, would it impact your gas in the summertime?
Right. There's other ways to use diesel besides running the diesel generator, and that is we do need some degree of heat in the summertime, even. Not nearly as much as the winter, but we do need some for hot water and for space heating, and we can use diesel for that. And that, of course, is very quiet.
Kristen,
is solar energy an option here or not?
That's an interesting question, because it never has been in the past, because we've had surplus hydropower during the time of the year the sun shines. And during the period of the year the sun does not shine is when we could use it. But maybe with climate change, that solar will finally become viable for Holden Village. That is a possibility.
But wouldn't now, with your new building in process, wouldn't that be a timely investment maybe?
Well, it would be a pretty big gamble at this point to invest a lot of money in solar with only the gas that maybe...